Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just 15 bucks a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
So hey everybody, welcome to episode 222 of the More Than Just Code podcast. My name is Tim Mitra and I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined once again by Jaime Lopez Jr. in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
And we also have Mark Rubin down in San Jose, California.
Hello.
All right, as they get ready for their Thanksgiving feasties. Last week we did a bunch of call-outs to our patrons, and we have a new patron as of last week, so thank you, Bevan, for joining the people who are supporting us through patreon.com. Thanks a lot. All right, so you've got some follow-up items here for us to talk about, so why don't you dig in?
Yeah, the first one was a little bit of clarification on the teeth cleaning. I wasn't getting my teeth cleaned. I was getting my dog's teeth cleaned at the vet. So,
I was wondering why it was so late. Why your dentist is late night dentist or something? Or
no, if anybody has recommendations for dentists who are willing to do procedures at 6 or 7 p.m., hit me up on that at Dev with Hair, because otherwise it's usually pretty tough, because dentists have, at least in my neck of the woods, they have very slim schedules.
So, really?
Certain hours out of the day, not usually past 3 p.m., and generally with Fridays off. So,
in terms of
ROI and lifestyle for getting a medical degree, it seems like dentistry is the way to go.
Wow. I do know that. I do know of dentists, husband-wife teams who, maybe because they were starting a practice or whatever, did offer a one night a week kind of thing up here in Ontario. And I don't know that dentists necessarily, I think they pretty much work 5 days a week here. I don't know. I don't hang around dentists too much other than playing hockey with them in the past. Stuff like that. All right. Last week we talked about the folding phones, and Jaime, you had put in a link that we didn't cover. So do you want to fill us in on that one?
Yeah, just some more flavor. So for those of you wondering whether Samsung is doing something crazy and causing further fragmentation in the Android ecosystem, don't worry. It turns out that Google has added official, or will add. It was a little unclear to me at the time. They will add official support for folding phone layouts into Android itself. So apparently if you just follow really good practices for your Vue's life cycle, then you should be fine.
All right. And I have a follow-up item here. On Monday, unless you were living under a rock, and maybe some of you are, Apple had cut orders on all three phones. And so the Wall Street Journal, I'm not sure who it is, but somebody had basically called them out, and the stock started to going down even further than it had in the last couple of weeks. So again, still I keep seeing, experts in the field, and we're not experts, we're just here for entertainment purposes only, but I have heard experts in the field saying Apple is still a stock to hang on to for the long term. This news came out on Monday, and last 2 weeks we were talking about Apple cutting estimates on the iPhone XR, and now that all three XR, XS, and XS Max have been cut back. So that was a big story on Monday, and of course, the stock continued to go down. I don't know where it is today. Do you know, Mark?
It was up a little bit today, so it's up to something like 178.
Yeah, so it was when this story came out, it was down to 186. So, mm-hmm. so it did go down a little bit further. But
It's been a mess.
Yeah. Who knew? But I mean, you know, the fact that it went up over 200 and then all the way up to almost 240, I think, right? That was, you know, that was remarkable.
233, I think, was the peak.
233, yeah. So, but that was remarkable. I mean, like, you know, we even none of us expected that as well. So still, I think it's still a pretty solid company. And I think I did also hear, too, that some of the trade issues with China, the tariffs and that kind of stuff, you know, is not helping. In fact, it's hurting Apple, even though for a while there, the government was saying that Apple would be exempt in some way. Obviously, they're not. So,
yep.
I think the broader context here is that the stock market has lost pretty much all of its 2018 gains at this point, as investors are spooked for many, many reasons. It doesn't surprise me that Apple would go down as the rest of the market has gone down. It's hard for me to really know what to think about this story. I do think it's probably the first story of this kind that's been actually true, or I predict will be true, versus all the other years before. Like, oh no, Apple's cutting. Remember? We were just talking about this last year.
Right, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh no, Apple's cutting the iPhone 10. Oh no, it's too pricey. People aren't buying it. Oops, turns out that was an utter false lie.
That's true. Yeah.
This one seems like it actually could be true, if only because it seems like Apple's strategy is changing towards, you know, getting more per user rather than acquiring more users. And their business model seems to have really focused on more premium devices, selling, you know, more premium services on top of that. And that's kind of a big reason why they decided not to, to no longer give unit sales, because it would not be as relevant to their success going forward.
Sure. I mean, the other thing too is that, like, you know, I don't know about the States, but here in Canada, the lending, prime lending rates have gone up, and you know, the thing, you know, Bank of Canada sets the lending rate, which affects mortgages. Mortgages have gone up a whole percent or half a percent, you know, in the last year. So, you know, and I don't know, I'm not an expert in financing, but I do know that when interest rates go up, the amount of purchases go down, right? So that could also be reflected in that too. I'm sure that, you know, all the shenanigans that are happening in the States are catching up with the consumer, you know, confidence as well, right? Which allows them to feel free to buy things, right? So that would affect high ticket items like iPhones and, you know, large screen TVs and stuff like that, you know, cars and things, you know. Is that not the case down there in the States with your
absolutely.
Finances?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There's also an argument to be made that the strategy of the three phones this year was a bit of a mistake on Apple's part, because the consensus has been that the 10S is not so much of an improvement over the 10 that it's worth upgrading early, I think. I think that's a consensus.
Right, yeah.
And the 10R replacing the 8 is not really at the same price point. It's a higher price point than the 8 was. So there really isn't that, you know, lower end.
Well, the 8 is still available though, right? So there is that low end, right?
Right. But if you already have an 8, you know, you're not going to buy it.
Oh, yeah.
So there's not a lot of pressure to upgrade this year for a lot of people, I think. So it may be just that, well, maybe Apple would have been better off to have, instead of the 10R, something a little bit lower priced and more like the 8 form factor, maybe. Or, you know, maybe it's a long-term play and next year everything will be great because that's the regular cycle. Who knows? It's hard to say.
Well, to me, it's more about, again, we talked about privacy and security and stuff like that in the past, and that seems to be a focus for Apple. If you think about it, their cornerstone products, I guess, is the word I'm looking for, all are Face ID products now, right? Like the iPads now have Face ID, you know, even the MacBook Air now has Touch ID, you know. Obviously, Apple's going towards the biometric stuff. So by bringing out the 10R, they've brought out another lower cost of entry device that has, you know, the Face ID technology, right? So, and I think A12 Bionic, is that what it's called? Being able to do machine learning machine learning support and all that kind of stuff. That's where they're kind of taking the market, or they want the market to go. You know, we've all said before, Apple kind of goes where Apple puts the puck in the corner and we go get it, you know, kind of thing. You know, the whole sort of Gretzky go where the puck is going kind of thing, right? Apple kind of knows, or seems to know in advance of what we know where the puck is going, or where the puck should go, right?
Yeah, no doubt. But, and they're all great phones. ones, but there is a little bit of a void in the lower price market that
keeping
people from buying new phones.
Sure. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. It definitely seems to me that for app developers, you probably won't expect your market to get much bigger. But there might be a shift because it is going up market for where Apple is focusing, that maybe there might be a shift in the kind of customer that you end up having.
Right. Right. Exactly.
It kind of making me think about subscription pricing, and if somebody dropped, I don't know, what was the low price for 10R? Was it like $749 US? Somebody's dropping $749, you better use Safe Area insets. You know, you better be notch compatible. You better use biometrics. Right, exactly. You can't sort of skate by with some of the things you could before. So definitely in your interest to watch those WWDC videos, make sure you modernize your apps and get them ready for whatever happens next year.
Well, another point about that, and I raised a couple of weeks ago, is that, you know, these new devices, I don't know about the iPads, but these three new devices all use that ARM64E architecture. So that's why Apple's pushing us, I think by March sometime there's a deadline to have updates and new apps have to support what they're calling the iPhone XR, but it's because of the architecture, I'm sure, with the iOS 12 SDK, right? That's something that's got to be considered as well, right? Because they want us to support their new devices and architectures, right? And then also you need to have the safe area in there for the new iPads as well, because they don't have, you know, bezels and home buttons, right?
Right, right.
Yeah, right. So we'll keep an eye on the stock. I would just stay calm. You know, Apple's not dead yet. we're not ready to call it a day yet. All right, so Jaime, the day has finally arrived with Verizon. What do we got there?
Soon to arrive, technically, but yeah, folks will remember that we talked about the dual SIM capability for these brand new iPhones we were just talking about. Sadly, Verizon didn't properly support it for reasons that escape me as to what the technical concerns were. But in an internal memo that was leaked to 9to5 Mac, Verizon is telling its employees it's expecting to launch that dual SIM support coming in early December.
So is the dual SIM in every phone? Because I don't know. I think Bell is the only one supporting it here in Canada as well, right? Like, is it because we're still putting SIMs in our phones up here, right? Like physical micro SIMs or whatever they are, nano SIMs. Do we know if the eSIM is in every market? Like, is it in every device that's going to every market?
I think the only exception, and it wasn't even that long ago we talked about this, and it's embarrassing for me. When Apple announced the dual SIM support, I think China was the only one that had sort of a one-off model that they have two physical SIMs and not the eSIM.
Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah.
Yeah, I just clicked a link here on that same article that says there's 10 markets supporting it, 10 countries supporting it, sorry.
Yeah, so depending on how you asked the question, I mean, every iPhone has at least one physical SIM. Some have two, and some have one physical and one eSIM. But the eSIM support completely depends upon the mobile network providers supporting it, as we discovered with Verizon.
And right, so here
from
I'm
hearing
say
other
it.
Canadian providers.
So I'm going to say it again, and this time I'm going to pronounce the first one correctly. It's Austria, Canada, Croatia, the Czech Republic, Germany, Hungary, India, Spain, the UK, and US Sprint. Smaller carriers don't support it. So now we've added Verizon to this, I guess, right? Because that was an article from September 13th, and this one is from November 21st, so 2 months later, two months and a bit later. So it's Verizon, T-Mobile, and AT&T were what Apple originally announced, but you said Verizon's just finally got their act together, right?
Yeah, there was something weird where if you had the second SIM activated, then your Verizon original count stuff went down to 2G, which is obviously not an acceptable user experience, so they must have discovered something on a technical nature that they had to resolve in their network.
Right, right. Okay. All right. On to the main stuff. This just in, literally, today was announced on The Verge, I believe, or Apple News, actually. The Verge is Apple News. That Amazon is now selling Macs, iPads, Apple Watches, and Apple TVs. I was just telling the guys before the show that I'm looking to get an Apple TV 4K for my house and waiting for the Black Friday sales, which will be over by the time you hear this. But, you know, I have been looking at Amazon too, and I did notice that Amazon doesn't sell Macs, at least in Canada, it doesn't sell Macs. I mean, because of course we have this border thing again with there's a different Amazon.com versus Amazon.ca, and other countries, I'm sure UK and all that kind of stuff have their own Amazons as well. But this is selling through Apple, so I guess I'm not sure if Amazon's become a direct dealer or they're selling products on behalf of Apple, but the pricing wasn't that great when I looked at it this morning, but again, This may not be available in Canada, Amazon Canada, but have you guys looked at Amazon.com to see what whether the Macs and stuff are available there?
I'll do that right now.
This is news to you guys.
Yeah, well, Mark looks that up. I haven't. I did hear that this news was coming. It was in the article I'd seen presented as sort of like, hey, all these resellers are going bye-bye. And because Amazon has a very special deal with Apple to say, hey, if you're going to sell these Apple products, they're going to come directly from us.
Right, right.
Push everybody else. Which in some respects is not a bad thing because Amazon has struggled to deal with like people having, you know, quote unquote, oh, this is a new device. It's like, no, it's not. It's a refurbished device being sold as a new device and you're getting scammed.
Right,
or
right.
Peripheral components like lightning cables. Hey, I thought this was being sold through being an Apple one, but nope, it turns out it's some knockoff. And I think from Apple's side, they were like, Amazon, you have to just remove it all if we're going to put our stuff officially on your site. Like, we need to make sure that we control that part of the experience.
Well, yeah, and Apple is very, very particular about record keeping and stuff like that with, you know, and like, you know, I'm sure Amazon.com won't be able to sell me a Mac because I'm in Toronto and would break the rules for Apple selling across borders and stuff like that, right? So
I'm seeing the full range of Macs here, as well as the iPhone 10, the iPad 2. It's kind of a weird one to be on there.
Mm-hmm.
Apple Watch.
Does the Mac pricing look like, comparatively speaking?
Well, let's see. You got the... I'm trying to find out. Let's see where it starts here. Okay. So they've got the 12-inch MacBook Rose Gold for $1,249. The MacBook... 12-inch regular, $1,169. The 256-gig 12-inch MacBook is $859. So I'm not seeing any high-end ones here. That's interesting. I'm not seeing any high MacBook Pros.
Mm.
There's a 13.3-inch MacBook Air Silver is $909.
If we go back to that first rose gold one you mentioned, the 12-inch, I'm looking on the American site. It says $1,299 for that guy, starting at for $256.
Hmm? For the Apple?
For, yeah, 12-inch MacBook?
Yep.
I think you said $1,299 for the
rose price. Gold. Yes.
Yeah.
$1,249.
Okay. Yeah. So it can't be the right thing price unless they're undercutting Apple, which wouldn't surprise me.
Apple TV 4K for $199.
Really? That's a good. Well, is that a good price? Let me check.
I think that's a standard price.
New Mac Mini for $799. Prime available, so we can get it by Friday, November 23rd.
Right.
As of this recording, it is Wednesday, the 21st.
AirPods for $154.
Yeah. How much was that Apple TV? $179 for the 32 gig. 64.
$199 for the 64 gig 4K.
Yeah, that's the same price as on Apple's site.
Yeah. You can buy an iPad 3 for $99.
Really?
Yeah.
iPad 3.
That's
for the 32-pin connector. Yeah. Why would you do that?
Yeah. If you only got a kiosk somewhere you need to put up.
Huh?
If you've only got $99 and you want an iPad, that's the one to get.
Yeah, I guess. Nothing wrong with it.
A little bit slow by today's standards.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, it's interesting to see what will happen with Amazon. The thing about this is like, okay, so if I buy it from Apple, it's going to come for free because it's going to get free shipping and it's going to come like relatively quickly. So I don't see the advantage of buying from Amazon in that case. Because, you know, unless you have Amazon Prime, you know.
Well, if you have Amazon Prime and the Amazon Prime credit card that gives you the 5% back.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Then that's probably a reasonably good deal.
Well, we'll have to see what, this is a day when I'm glad I'm no longer a reseller because trying to compete with Amazon would be suicide.
Yeah.
You know, it was bad enough competing with Apple stores. All right. So moving on. So it looks like my future king, Prince William, has launched into attacking the social tech giants on their problems. I guess he's weighing in on the issues that we've been seeing with the Facebooks and all the disclosures and things that people are having trouble with. And it sort of follows up with an article I'm going to talk about in a minute with Tim Cook. But he's weighed in on how he sees the social networks, the Twitters, the Facebooks, the Snapchats, YouTubes, Apple, and Google, Apple as well in there. He's a little upset with people. So
yeah, I think everything he's saying is true, but what makes him an expert? Why do we care what he says?
I just think it's interesting that somebody from the British monarchy is finally weighing in on this stuff, right? It's been a long time coming. If you think about it, like they should have said something a long time before this, right? I think it's sort of the proliferation proliferation of cyberbullying, which has been around for a number of years now, and hate speech, and you know, obviously the fake news and all that kind of stuff is going to be a problem. You guys saw that we talked about deepfake a couple of months ago, I guess, but you guys saw the Obama announcement that was apparently put out a little while ago, and it was as if Obama was talking about things, but it was actually, I think the voice was done by one of the guys from Key and Peele.
Right.
Yeah. You had heard that, Mark?
No, I haven't heard of that one.
Oh yeah, no, it's a video that came out like in the middle of last week, and it was, you know, one of these demonstrations of, I don't know if it was meant to be a demonstration or just a comedy piece or whatever, but it looked like Obama, and it was like completely done with deepfake, and the voicing was done by the director guy from who made the movies. What's his name?
Jordan Peele, I think his name
Jordan
is.
Jordan Peele, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So he did the voicing of Obama. It didn't, to me, you could tell it wasn't Obama's voice, but it certainly did look a lot like his face, you know, so in this apparent video, you know, except for the fact that he was sitting at the White House Oval Office table with an American flag behind him, which we all know is not possible to do these days, right, from a set point of view. But that was interesting. And there was a CBC did a thing on that same thing where I know we've diverged away from the cyberbullying thing, but they did a demonstration where you could basically put anybody's face on live video these days, right? So scary stuff. Anyway. And then the second story that follows up on this one is that Tim Cook has now called out and said that he thinks that the regulation is going to have to come into play. I think he means government regulation. He says it's inevitable the way things are going, that he's not a fan of it, but he's a big believer in free market, he says, but it's just getting out of hand. And of course, I don't know what government's going to basically be able to win behind that, but there you go. You guys had a chance to read this piece?
Yeah, I think, I don't know how quick it will come, but I do think we will have some rough equivalent of GDPR, the General Data Protection regulations that the EU has passed. I think will pass in some shape or form in the United States. If I were to ballpark it, I would say in the next 10 to 20 years, we'll have some, you know, American equivalent of that. So I think Tim Cook's right on that. I can't really talk about this one without also talking about some of the privacy related stuff that Apple has been getting dinged on. And I don't even know if it's fair or not. My opinion has changed on it depending on my mood. So we know that Apple is doing, you know, very, very excellent job in general about dealing with privacy. The thing that people are most specifically picking on recently that I haven't decided, you know, where I would fall. And I think I fall on one side of them being sort of ideologically pure, and I fall on a different side of them being pragmatic. And that's the relationship with Google as the default search engine.
So, for Apple?
Yeah. Which if you say, all right, you know, Google's on the dirty side of in terms of, you know, not being as concerned about your privacy as Apple is. The argument goes that, well, isn't that sort of inconsistent to be like, hey, we really care about your privacy, but here's this tiny little keyhole that somebody can go peep at you through. I think that's a fair point, but on the pragmatic side, I'm like, well, I kind of don't want my iPhone to suck when I search real stuff on the web, you know? it's sort of a convenience aspect to have things sort of just work. Certainly, I could just fire up Safari and use DuckDuckGo. It's not as convenient as just typing it into Spotlight, which uses Google under the covers, unless you go in and change the settings.
Oh, really?
And so I don't know. And Apple like gets paid a boatload. They probably are literal boats that just sort of show up across the bay, you know, delivering money to Apple. I don't know what to think about that one. But I do generally agree with Tim Cook's sort of stance that this privacy aspect is going to be inevitable. We will definitely have to deal with it as developers. We should really start thinking about it now.
Yeah, right. Well, but aren't other things like telephone and newspaper and television and radio and television, aren't they regulated in the United States in terms of what you can show at certain times of day and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, and that's where it's sort of tricky because those scale really well in terms of how do you know what sort of regulation would you have and what sort of measures would you put in place to make sure that fake news doesn't come out, as an example, on CBS's nightly news. There's kind of only a handful of people that get involved in having to deal with that, and it impacts, you know, millions of people. With something like Facebook and Google and Twitter, they're sort of stuck with like, well, we have hundreds of millions of people, or in the case of Facebook, we have billions of people. They're all, everybody is essentially a publisher in that sort of world. So how do you really deal with things like the cyberbullying that Prince William mentioned? I think they could be doing better. I don't know that it's a solvable problem because you don't really have, to use a really terrible sounding metaphor, you don't really have one throat to choke, right? It's like, all right, you throttle, you know, Facebook and it dies. Okay, great. Somebody else fills the void. You haven't really solved the problem.
Yeah, I don't know. And then there's the other side of it too. I don't know if you guys, have you guys heard about the thing that happened here in a Toronto private school last week?
No, I'm unaware.
No.
Okay, so, well, there was a hazing, right, of a grade 9 student by some, it's an all-boys school here, and there was a hazing, and basically involved sexual assault by a bunch of boys on a younger kid, and it was taped with phones, right, recorded, and it was published onto Instagram, and it went viral, and of course, that's how the school found out about it, and I mean, so then the thing that turned around was that any kid that had this video on their phone was in possession of child pornography, right? So there was a whole sort of, and again, like kind of spirals out of control really quickly, right? And how do you explain to a 13-year-old kid that the video you're showing your friends is actually pornographic, you know? Because like today, there's so much access to that kind of content. You know, as parents, we can't control what our kids do and don't see, right? Especially when, you know, because you and I both, we all know, like having grown up, you know, even though I grew up when there was no internet, you still found out about stuff and you still saw stories and you still were, you know, handed books and magazines and stuff like that when you were a kid, right? But you guys hadn't heard about that yet. So basically, like, six of the kids have been charged, and it's a, you know, the whole school is in an uproar, and yet, you know, it's I hate to say it, but it's not something that just happened out of the blue. It's not like, you know, like a random shooting in a McDonald's. This is something, this hazing practice has been going on for years, and I'm sure that this is not the only school that's happening. It just happened to be that how it was discovered was by somebody posting the original video up on Instagram and then going viral, right? But with all these school kids, right? I mean, it was so bad that like the newspapers or the news channels won't even post it on their websites, you know? So yeah.
So that's a really good example to use for, like, you know, the CBS Nightly News with Lester Holt is never ever going to show that video that you just talked about.
Right.
They might reference it, and actually, now that you've described more about it, I probably overheard some of that stuff. I assumed it was in the United States. I didn't even know it was in Canada because I wasn't listening that closely. I was probably doing dinner or something.
Right. Yeah.
So there is like the measure of control to make sure that like bad stuff doesn't get out. I don't really blame Instagram per se for this one because
used. I'm not saying blaming. It could have been Facebook or it could have been whatever. Yeah.
Sure. Like, but it's hard to, like, how would they address this? Those of you out there might be shaking fists like, aha, well, we can use on-device machine learning to make sure that, you know, a video of this type doesn't get, you know, uploaded. It's like, well, okay. But then you have the other side of that that has happened with automated stuff, in particular Facebook, where their automated censoring stuff removed people sharing, I forget what the title of this photo is, but it's an iconic, horrible photo from the Vietnam era where there's like the napalm being dropped and there's like the naked children running towards the camera.
Oh, yeah. Another one. You mean like, the little girl, yeah?
That's a historical document, right? And it's something we should never forget because it was a terrible time in humanity. But if you're writing, you know, machine learning stuff to avoid, you know, naked bodies and naked children's bodies, you're probably going to end up blocking that one unintentionally. So it's not really a, hey, we just throw some engineering at it sort of problem. And that's sort of where I'm like, I can appreciate what Prince William is trying to do. I just don't really have a great sense of how it can move forward in an effective way, in a global way, because that's sort of where we are now, a globally connected society.
Yeah. I mean, like the monarchy is sort of upper management, you know, in terms of Canadian governments, you know, and even in your British government, right? They're there, they're the head of state, but, you know, they're not really the government per se, you know, they're symbolic leadership, right? You know, like you guys have your House of Representatives and the Senate and that kind of stuff. We have our parliament, our parliaments here, you know, and the UK has their own parliament as well, right? So it's you know, it's in if you equate it to like a corporate environment, it's like the by the time it gets to the very top of the top of the food chain or the command chain, it's kind of, you know, watered down. So I'm sure the monarchy has known about this for a long time, or at least, you know, young. I mean, and maybe it's Prince William because he's a younger guy. I mean, he's, you know, in his 30s, I think, right? So he's the voice of the future, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's coming back to the whole sort of regulation thing. It's the genie is out of the bottle. So it's like, how do you control it once it's already been released? You know, like you can't unsee things, you know what I mean? Like in that sense, come a long way. Anyway, not much we can add about that.
Well, speaking of privacy, and Apple has apparently acquired an AI startup that has a privacy conscious approach. So they've acquired Silk Labs, which apparently focused on building on-device machine learning software, which right. seems like it's right up Apple's alley of they don't want to have your information. And so they're approaching it from a let's do everything locally on your device right. or devices instead of the Amazon, Microsoft, Google approach of doing things in the cloud. I don't have a lot to add here other than what the article has, but apparently it was co-founded by a former Mozilla CTO. Mm-hmm. They launched one product apparently via Kickstarter. It didn't sort of go anywhere, but I guess the tech was pretty solid, even if their business plan wasn't. And so they've reportedly been acquired by Apple.
Well, it's probably an acqui-hire. They acquired them for the people as opposed to the products.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows?
Cool. Well, hopefully they use their powers for good.
Mm-hmm.
From great power comes great responsibility. Is that what Mr. Lee used to say?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I'm still, I don't know if you guys remember, but I'm still concerned that AI is only as good as the data we feed it. If we feed it biased information, we can just amplify those biases, right? So.
Oh, that's absolutely true. For sure.
I have to be careful of that, right? So.
Yeah. I think I would go one step forward and say categorically and definitively, we will feed it biased data, even unintentionally. And so it's a never-ending struggle to make sure that we can reduce and continue to improve how that bias mm-hmm. is enacted and dealt with.
Right, right. Cool. All right. So I guess we're at the pick part of the show, the grandma. So let's see what kind of picks Jaime has. What do you got for us, Jaime?
Mine is the set of conference talks from Swift Heroes 2018, which I believe was in Italy. I'd have to look it up. I'll do some real-time follow-up on that. I believe some of these talks, just based on the titles and the people, are some that I've seen before, like Paul Hudson's Separation Concerns, Refactoring View Controllers Live, and Ellen Shapiro's Siri Shortcuts were both very good that I've seen at other conferences. But there's some new ones on here that look pretty interesting to me, like Daniel Lever's GraphQL for Mobile Developers, and where was the other one in the list? Advanced Swift Optics by Elviro Roca, which, despite the title, because I kind of clicked through really quickly, I don't think it has anything to do with like image handling. It seemed to be some sort of thing called lenses that you can use to do nifty cool programming tricks. So it's sort of tickled my fancy is like, oh, I don't know what an optic is. Let me go check this out. And unfortunately, I haven't, so I can't sort of speak to that particular talk, but there are 15 videos here for your enjoyment. Let's see, where was Swift Heroes? In Italy? Where specifically? In Italia? Torino.
Hmm.
That's your follow-up.
Cool. Just looking at some of the people speaking. Interesting stuff. Okay. My pick's kind of, you know, we talk about having iOS on the Mac. So, you know, because that's the marzipan sort of thing coming forward. And I was delighted to find yesterday a tweet on Twitter about running the original Mac operating system on iOS and using this Mac B Mini or Virtual Mini, or a Virtual Mac, Mini Virtual Mac for iOS. So I took it for a spin today. It's basically a GitHub project, which is Xcode. I think it's a port of this virtual Mac thing that's been going around for a little while. You can download a Mac ROM image and import it into this thing. And here I can show, I don't know if you guys might remember the sound, but if you haven't ever heard it before, I'm just going to open up my iPad here, hold it up to the microphone, and launch this little virtual, this app. And you basically opened up a Mac Mini or original 128 or Mac Plus, a two-finger swipe over here, load in the floppy disk, and I've got Welcome to Macintosh, and I have System Startup Disk and a trash can and File Edit View special menus and all that kind of stuff. And you can load up disk images of programs. Of course, I've got all my floppy disks turned into disk images years ago, so I have to go find out the CD where I put them on. But I can load up, you know, Dark Castle or Beyond Dark Castle or all those, Mac Paint or Mac Write and play around with Mac OS on my iPad. So not the Mac OS you're thinking of, but the Mac OS I'm thinking of. That's cool.
The real question is, does it actually say trash or does it say bin?
Well, this is before localization. I mean, well before local. Everything's in American, right? So mind you, I think they did have localized operating systems back then too, but you know, it says trash. And it's the old, it's basically the black and white OS. There are a couple of options for for Macs you can emulate. Let me just open it up again. You can emulate a Mac Plus, a 128K Mac, as I said before. Just going to do a two-finger swipe here. It's really kind of cool using the mouse, using your finger as a mouse, I have to say. Okay, it's got British, French, Spanish, a couple of Spanishes, and US, whatever country that is, I'm not sure. Now you can run Mac 2 in here, which basically means you can run a color operating system as well. So I've currently got System 608 loaded up on it from a floppy, but because I don't know if you remember back in those days, if you didn't have a hard drive, you used to boot off a floppy. So you would have put a system file on like a Mac Word or Mac Write floppy disk, and then you'd basically launch your app right onto that. And then to save, you'd have to switch out the floppy disk and that kind of stuff. But you can create images and stuff like that, and it uses the document directory in the iOS app to be like your file system, so you can store different disk images and stuff like that, and create, you know, I could create a hard drive on here, I suppose, and load an OS on it, and I'll have to give that a shot. But yeah, I just loaded this up just, you know, a couple of hours before the show. Like I said, I saw this yesterday, but yeah, it's lots of fun playing around with the original Mac OS on my iPad. I think we were talking to Jonathan about that last week, right? We were on Spotcast, he was talking about the fact that he's got some really old format stuff from his original Macs, because I think his first Mac was a Classic 2 or Classic. So he's got, like, you know, Claris Work documents and stuff like that, and, you know, there's no way to read them. And basically use Dropbox or iCloud or air sharing, or what do you call it, AirDrop mm-hmm. to transfer files over to this OS, which is kind of cool, right? So
I had never considered this as a possibility for Jonathan's problem of, like, he wants to look at his old work that he has done before. Yeah. Why doesn't he use that disk image and load it into his iPhone or his iPad and scroll around?
Totally. Wow. Yeah, no, this is cool. Like all those old games are fun. I mean, like, I don't know if you ever heard of Dark Castle. Have you heard of Dark Castle, Mark?
Of course. Used to play it on Mac.
It had an Easter egg. Do you remember the Easter egg was on Christmas Day, Mark?
I don't remember that. No.
So the way the game worked is you went into this mansion, and in the main hall, you went into different rooms, and you had, you know, you tried to solve these puzzles, and if you fell, you would land in the dungeon. You'd have to escape out of the dungeon, and you used to throw rocks at these rats and bats and stuff like that, and it was a whole 2D world. But when you came into the main hall on Christmas Day, there would be an elaborate black and white, you know, rendered Christmas tree there. So yeah, it was lots of fun. So it was always fun to play Beyond Dark Castle and Dark Castle on Christmas Day. But I've got all those old helicopter games and all kinds of old Mac 68K stuff archived somewhere, you know, so this is fun.
Does this mean that you have HyperCard on iOS through this mechanism?
I technically could, yeah. I could load up HyperCard on here. You're right. Mm-hmm. In fact, I still have a sealed set of manuals and I have all the floppy disks for all this stuff. You know, I even have a bunch of System 1 floppy disks that Carol found me on eBay once. Mm. So I've got the original, 400K floppies with the Apple logos on them and the whole bit. You know, so.
I've still got a sealed box with Microsoft Word for the on floppy, and it's like 50 floppy disks in a box.
It would have been Word 6 probably, or Word 4 maybe.
I think it was probably 6
or 4 maybe. I think 4 was floppy with a lot of floppy. But I have an original box of Mac Write, and I think I have Mac Draw as well, or sorry, Mac Paint. But I definitely have Mac Paint on floppy disk for sure. And I've got I have a working 512K Mac here as well. But this is much faster than a 512K Mac, if you can imagine, right? Like, I don't know if you heard how quickly it booted up there, but it was like, you know, I just tapped the icon and it went bing. In the original ones, it would take, you know, a good 2-3 minutes just reading off the floppy before you would get past the post or a power on self test, right, which is what the bing is. Yep, cool stuff. Actually, I should try the Mac 2 version, because that would have the chime instead of the bing, right? So that's what I'll have fun with, is working on Mac OS. I'll freak people out on the streetcar by opening up my Mac and opening up Mac OS on actually, not even Mac OS, it's System 6. It wasn't even called back Mac OS back then, and just, you know, play around with that on the streetcar, freak people out.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if the Paint program is easier to use than it would be with a mouse. It's kind of a little bit
definitely,
more natural.
Definitely, yeah. There's a video. There's a demo video on the site if you follow the link, where he actually writes the word hello and then copies it, makes a pict out of it and copies it and then pastes it into a Mac Write document, and you know, saying welcome to Macintosh and then hello, just like Steve Jobs did back in the original announcement. Lots of fun.
So you got to dig out your old Inside Macintosh books to start programming it, right?
Yeah, I actually have a volume with, I think, volume 1 to 3 in one big giant tome. Mm-hmm. It's quite thick. It's in the, I know exactly where it is in the garage too. So mm-hmm. I have to get my old Code Warrior discs out, right?
Mm, yep, Code Warrior.
Yeah. And I've got my Learning C on the Mac by Dave Mark from back in, I think it might have been System 6 or 7. So probably came with a floppy disk or a CD-ROM. Mm-hmm. Have to dig that out and start writing some legacy software. But
there you go.
Yeah, we're back in time. I'll be the only Mac developer around. Yeah, mm-hmm. So that's my pick.
So my pick is I've talked a lot about machine learning and lots of different machine learning courses out there. I found a new course that people might be interested in. This one, if you remember a long time ago, I talked about a course on Coursera, which is one of these online learning places by Andrew Ng, who's a professor at Stanford and an expert in machine learning. That was a general machine learning course, and there's a lot of different types of machine learning out there. Neural networks are kind of the most trendy right now and most used right now, but there's support vector machines and just regular regression techniques and Bayesian techniques that are all just sort of general machine learning. But now, as I said, neural networks are the most predominant type of machine learning out there. In particular, things called deep neural networks or deep learning are really big right now. And these are neural networks with just a whole lot of layers, so huge numbers of free parameters. And they've recently become more used and more popular because computing power has caught up to the needs to do these networks. So now computers are fast enough to actually use these networks pretty regularly and reliably. And the amount of data out there is enough to actually train these networks. So deep learning is a thing you'll hear a lot about these days. And Andrew Ng, the same professor, has another actual series of courses. They call it a specialization on Coursera called deeplearning.ai. Mm. And it consists of 5 shorter courses. So it's, the old one was a full-length course and, many, many weeks long. But this one, it's broken up into 5 smaller ones that are all about, they say 3 or 4 weeks, but, I actually went through them a lot quicker than that each. Maybe because I'm a little bit familiar with some of the topics already, maybe for a beginner it may take the full amount of time, but they're much shorter. And the courses are, the first one is Neural Networks and Deep Learning, which is just a general introduction to what deep neural networks are and how they work. Then course 2 is Improving Deep Neural Networks, Hyperparameter Turning, Regularization and Optimization. Course 3 is Structuring Machine Learning Projects. And so those 3 are sort of just all about sort of general types of deep neural networks and how they work. And then the last 2, one of them is called convolutional neural networks, which is a specialized technique that's really, really powerful for computer vision and image learning. And my guess is, in fact, more than a guess, is that that's what they use over at Apple for all the, the photo recognition and Create ML and all that kind of stuff. And Google Photos, these are all based on convolutional neural networks. These are techniques that have been really developed strongly just in the last, 5 or 10 years or so, and have really become mainstream. And then the last one is sequence models. That's all about something called recurrent networks, which are sort of time-based networks for learning sequences, time-based sequences of things. So they're really good for voice recognition or natural language programming natural language
processing.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, which is how they recognize that's like how Google Translate works, how recognizing text and learning, reading from text and learning from text and things like that. So anything that has a time component. So they're pretty good courses. They're just like anything online. You'll get out of them what you put into them. You can go through the courses and do all the exercises and watch all the videos and just kind of, do the homeworks and get them all right and not necessarily learn anything. But if you put the time in and really try to understand everything that's going on, there's a lot of information in there and they're pretty good courses. So I recommend checking them out if you have an interest in this thing. What's nice about it is that they have it, like I said, broken up into the courses, the 5 smaller courses, and they've got the one whole course on convolutional networks and the one on recurrent networks, which are both kind of interesting and kind of go beyond what some of the other courses do. So definitely check it out on Coursera.
So how much, what is Coursera? Is it like free to do it, but if you pay if you want a certificate?
Yeah,
like
so
that?
This is kind of interesting. They've changed their, it used to be all free.
Okay.
And they went to a model where you had to pay per course, but you could audit the course. And originally, I think you could audit the course and still have access to all the materials, but you wouldn't get the official certificate. And then they changed it again to, well, you can, by when you audit the course, you can watch the videos, but you don't have access to any of the quizzes or anything like that. And that's kind of where it is now. You can watch the videos if you don't pay for it, but you can't get access to the homework or the videos or anything like that. But they've moved now to a subscription model, which is kind of nice. So instead of paying by the course, it used to be like $50 per course, but now it's $50 per month, and you can do as much as you want to do in a month, which is pretty nice. So all of these five courses, you know, I paid the $50 once, and I've finished them all at this point, or very close to finishing the last one right now. And I can do as many more as I want, you know, in the next few weeks of the month.
So it's $50 a month? Is that
$50 a month subscription? Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yep. So it's kind of a pretty good deal, you know, if you have the time and you want to put the effort in, you know, $50, you get access to a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, I think Lynda.com was $25. I used to pay that back when I was working for myself and stuff.
Yeah.
And I always made sure I went and learned something at least once during the month, you know.
Yep.
Cool. So this is under the specialization. So that's what I've linked under here. Deep learning specialization.
Deep learning specialization, right.
Yeah, because there are tons of deep learning courses. Actually, it's funny that you mentioned that because I was listening to a podcast this morning, and they were giving a real quick definition of what is this machine learning, right? No, this is deep learning. Different thing, right?
Well, no, they're not really.
Well, so machine learning is like, you know, rather than programming a computer to do a task step by step, you train a computer to do a task. Was sort of the TLDR definition of what deep learning was for this broadcast I was listening to earlier.
Well, machine learning is a very broad term. It's a pretty broad term that covers pretty much any time where you have some kind of computer model and you give it a lot of data and it essentially learns from the data.
Right.
And then you can apply that learning to make predictions about other things that are in that category, but not the same data that you started from. Very, very broad definition of what machine learning is. And there's a lot of different types of machine learning or AI. You know, it's kind of, so in some ways it's the same thing, but maybe the purists would have defined them differently, but they're, you know, similar things. There's many, many, many different types, one of which is using neural networks. And neural networks have been around for a long time, but it's only in recent years that the computing power was there to really make them work well. And because the computers have gotten so powerful, they've started to dominate the space of machine learning. And there's a specific area of neural networks that is called deep learning. And those use what are called deep neural networks, which again is not really a different thing. It's just a different term to describe networks that have a lot of layers. And they're called deep because they have a deep, you know, they're deep in layers. They're very wide in layers. And the deeper you make the network, the more capable of learning they are. Of course, at more computational cost, but they are, you know, they're capable of learning more. So deep learning is the new trendy hotness in machine learning. But it is a type of machine learning. It's not a separate thing from machine learning.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So it says here on the page I'm looking at, it starts November 21st. Is this, you say you've already done the courses, but the courses like, dive right in?
I noticed that myself. Since the courses are completely self-driven, it starts whatever day you start.
Oh, okay.
So if you wait till tomorrow, it'll start November 22nd.
Right.
And all the deadlines are based on the day you start, because it's not like there's a strict, you know, timing where the class is only held once and you have to take it at that time.
Right.
They're all self-driven.
Yeah, I was just looking at one of the breakdowns here. There's quite a few videos to go through, I guess.
Yes.
So it's not like you can sit down and do it all in one sort of sitting.
Well, you can. I mean, they're short videos. Most of the videos are anywhere between 5 and 20 minutes long, each video.
So it's sort of like Khan Academy in a sense.
Yeah. And in fact, I mean, all of the, within a given, say, given week, most of the videos really are one continuous thing, but they're broken up to make it a little bit more digestible.
Right.
Usually I would just watch them straight through, because at the top, once you start watching on a topic, you just watch the whole thing.
Sure. Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, to check it out.
Yeah.
Neat. Yeah. And it says here, you you can try it for 14 days and get your refund if you're not satisfied or whatever.
Yeah, that's actually what I did.
Yeah?
Yeah. Oh. Well, I ended up paying the $50 at the end because I wasn't quite finished and I wanted to finish. But I started with that.
So you start by paying or you start with the 14-day trial?
I think I only got a 7-day trial. So, I probably could have finished all 5 courses in the 14 days because I was going pretty quickly through them. Mm-hmm, but, you know, most people probably want to take more time to do it. I wanted to get through them fast. So I did that.
Yeah.
So I only had a 7-day trial and I got through, I think, the first 3. No, I probably didn't get that many done. Maybe the first 2 in the first week. Sure. And then I paid the $50 to get the rest of them.
Cool. Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. Well, I guess that's it for the week. And so, Jaime, if people want to get in touch with you on the interwebs, where would they look?
I'm on Twitter as @devthehair.
And Mark, if people want to get in touch with you?
markr@smapsoft.com.
All right. And I am Tim Mitra, TimMitra on the Twitter machine. And that's the best way to get a hold of me. So until next week, we'll talk to you later. Bye.
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 If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the More Than Just Code website at mtjc.fm. You can get in touch with us on the website or follow us on Twitter at mtjc_podcast. If you have feedback or questions, send us a tweet with the hashtag AskMTJC. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/MTJC. You can find details on how to help us out on our website at mtjc.fm/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
For Apple, I guess we'll have to wait till midnight on Thursday to find out what they're going to offer, right? If anything.
Yeah, they barely offer anything. It's almost not even worth it.
Yeah. Well, I want to get one thing on my list is to get an Apple TV 4K. Uh-huh. I finally got my alarm system updated, so it's now cellular instead of, or Wi-Fi they call it, instead of wireless, I guess, instead of using a phone, a landline. So I finally canceled my landline, that was like basically $45 a month for something I never even used. Right, other than the fact that I needed it for the alarm system for internet, right? And then Bell said to me, you know, well, what about TV? I'm like, well, I use Rogers for TV. They're like, well, we have this thing called Fibe Aux, which is streaming television, right? Not using a cable box, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not interested. I couldn't get my wife to watch, you know, TV on her iPad if my life depended on it, right? And they're like, well, you know, if you bundle the Aux TV for a year with your internet, you know, I was paying $120 a month for internet with, unlimited or whatever. They would give me both services for like $80. So like save, you know, almost $40, get rid of the $40 phone bill, save $40 on the whole package and get to watch streaming television, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, but the app that runs it's like an app you download from the iOS store, right? And so of course it runs on Apple TV. So if I get, you know, another 4K Apple TV or get a 4K for my TV down here, and then I take this Apple developer TV thing and put it on Carol's TV, then maybe I can get her to cut the cable, right? You know, there's lots of sports channels on it too, which is kind of interesting. You know, for not that I watch sports, but I know you guys do, right?
No. How many hockey channels are there?
Well, so Rogers bought the hockey, right? So from CBC. So, you know, when on Saturday night, there's like 4 games on the 4 channels. We have two sports channels, the Sports Network and the Sports Network 2. And then there's CBC used to be the Hockey Night in Canada channel. And then Rogers also owns City TV, which is Toronto's TV channel, right? So there basically are 4 markets playing at the same time on Saturday night. If you're into hockey, you pick and choose, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The main Leaf game would be on you know, CBC, and then everybody else would cover whatever other games are on, right? So it's like we have too much TV, too much hockey now.
Yeah. Do you get NFL games up there?
Yeah. 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 Well, we have all the major channels, and you can subscribe to ESPN and ESPN2 as well, right? So
yeah. I wonder if you have the same weird blackout rules that we have here in the US for the
I think think we do.
Yeah, you probably do. Yeah.
Like I think the Buffalo Bills are sort of our unofficial team.
Yeah.
That they'll come up here and play a game, and you know, so I think they play a couple of games up here in Toronto. So yeah,
that might make sense because they're close enough to you.
Yeah, and I think there's a large enough fan base. I think I went and saw a Bills game with my dad. No, maybe I didn't. I don't think I saw Bills. I saw Sabres with my dad once, but not football.
Yeah. The weird rule that we have down here, I mean, there's all sorts of weird blackout rules, but the most weird one is that there's only one way to get out of market games. Like in this age of on demand, yeah, you'd pretty much expect to be able to just with any cable package you have or non-cable package you have, you should be able to just watch whatever game you want, even if you have to pay for it, right? But if you have pay-per-view, you should be able to. But you actually can't unless you have DirecTV. There's only one way to get those out-of-market games, and that's through NFL Prime Ticket on DirecTV. And that's because they have an exclusive contract with the NFL. And it's pretty ridiculous. It's a complete monopoly. It's ridiculously overpriced, ridiculously expensive, and you have to have, you know, the satellite service to get it, which is nuts.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah.
Well, it's a cash grab, I guess, right?
Yeah.
So what games, like, would it be games that you could technically go to physically that you would, or you're talking about out of market, like games that aren't in your local
like
area?
So I'm a Patriots fan, so I would like to watch every Patriots game, you know, that I can. Since I'm in the Bay Area, the local games are the 49er game and the Raider game. So the Patriots are considered an out of market game. And even when the network game, so there's always a couple of games that are the official, you know, CBS or Fox official game that they're showing on the network. If those are going up against a local game, the local channels are not allowed to show that game. They have to show the local game unless the local game is sold out.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yeah, because of the weird rules. So even if the official game that everyone else in the whole country or world gets to see on CBS, if that's the Patriots game, if the Raiders are playing at the same time and they're not sold out, and it's an away game, then the local stations have to show that game, and I can't watch my game. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
On the other hand, the Toronto Maple Leafs is always sold out, which is really funny. But yeah, no, I don't know if we have any weird rule like that, but because I mean, there's so, like, now that there's all these, you know, cable channels for us, like, you know, there's 900 channels or whatever, there's always a way to watch a game, right?
So yeah,
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
And you can pay for the packages,
for baseball,
right?
Let's say through Comcast, I can watch any game that's on pay-per-view if I choose to,
right,
at any time,
including out of market,
including out of market. Yeah. It's everything's available on pay-per-view, everything, probably basketball and hockey too, but I haven't really checked. But football, they have this crazy exclusive deal and it's just not available except through DirecTV.
So would that be the NFL doing that, or maybe they've got some deal with DirecTV
Right? Yeah. They have a deal with DirecTV that gives DirecTV the exclusive right to show out of market games,
except for
games that are the official network games, as long as they don't conflict with the local game. Like, for example, if it's a Monday night football game or a Sunday night game, those are the special games when there's only one game, or a Thursday night game, then, you know, chances are the local team isn't playing in that game. And if they were, it doesn't actually matter because there's only one game, right? So that game is always available, even if it's not a market game.
But on Sundays,
when there's multiple games on at the same time, then it becomes an issue.
Yeah, I don't know. Sports is a whole other thing. I mean, we get dumb TV rules. Jonathan was going on off on podcast last week about The Flash, because we finally got The Flash on Netflix in Toronto or in Ontario, but it's 2 days late. So he was saying, you know, I have to stay off the internet, otherwise things get spoiled, right? But like, we have these weird, I don't know if it's the CRTC, which is our Canadian, you know, regulators or whatever, or if it has to do with advertising. I'm sure it has something to do with advertising and who's paying the bill for the TV show or the broadcast or whatever, right? So, because we've always had goofy rules about how things are shown here, right? Like, you know, I can't watch, if somebody tweets something about Saturday Night Live, I can't watch 90% of the clips because they'll be blocked out, or the viewer's not made it available in my region or whatever is the the lane. Yeah, but there are. I mean, if you dig around a bit, you can find it because there is a Saturday Night Live YouTube channel you can subscribe to, and suddenly you can see all the stuff that you couldn't see that your friend posted, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It's just like, I think Jonathan's, correct me if I'm wrong here, Jaime, but Jonathan's point was like, this is like 2018, and like you can't stop people from accessing content, right? Like the you know, national borders are not real anymore, you know? Like, you and I are talking to each other right now. We're not even in the same bloody time zone, you know?
Yeah,
you know, you're 3,000 miles away, right?
And it certainly seems silly when you have Commonwealth and former Commonwealth countries that are, they all speak the same language, so you don't even really have to translate it, which gets me to I wonder if the province of Quebec causes issues of like, well, I guess we now have to have a French translation before we can even show it in Canada. That would make it a little bit less straightforward. But like, there's no reason it couldn't show in New Zealand, South Africa, and Australia, and the UK at the same time as the United States.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you can't sell products here. Like I don't know about TV. Like, I don't know if that's really a rule with, there's a language. Well, I guess the language has to be available or something, Bill 331 or whatever it says, or you don't yell at your phones, people. But like, we have a rule here that if you want to sell a product in Canada, it has to have French labeling on it, right? So maybe that's where that extra $50 that goes towards Apple stuff is probably for the extra hassle of making the packaging bilingual, right? Like, they put a sticker over top of the box, like the same box you guys get, but they put a sticker over it to have the bilingual text there, right? So, and same, you know, like any product that's sold here, that unless it's imported, even in imported stuff, ends up getting a sticker slapped on it, right? So physical goods, I mean, right? So yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't get it. It makes my brain hurt.
I think the one last thing I wanted to say about wacky regional rules for sports, at least here in the United States.
Yeah.
I might have the teams wrong here, so I apologize if I do, but let's just pretend I have the teams correct. So apparently there are a lot of Atlanta Braves baseball fans in Hawaii because for reasons that are unclear to me, as Hawaii is not even close to any team, the stations there decided to get the rights to Atlanta Braves baseball, and that's what they show there. Not even vaguely close, but
that is,
if you're watching baseball in Hawaii, it's going to be the Atlanta Braves.
Where does Atlanta practice or something, maybe?
In Georgia, which is nowhere close to Hawaii, that's for sure.
Well, it's like Dunedin, Florida is where the Blue Jays practice, right? So there's a whole bunch of snowbirds. We call them snowbirds, or people, like retired people who go down for the winter.
Yeah, for spring training.
Well, yeah, and they live down there, and around Dunedin, and they go watch the spring training games, right? And stuff like that. Yeah, exactly.
Ooh,
yeah.
That's actually a good question, though. I don't know where they train, because the Seattle Mariners go down to Peoria, Arizona, definitely outside the state of Washington for spring training.
Yeah, because you have winter like we do, right, over there?
Not quite like you do, but we do have winter.
You're further north than me. What are you talking about? You probably have igloos up there in Washington.
No, that's up in Alaska. We are in this nice little geographic boundary with mountains to the east.
Oh, yeah, you're in that rainforesty place like Vancouver, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, I forget the term. First Nations person once told me in Vancouver, he was doing some wiring for us for a network, and he explained to me the reason why Vancouver is the way it is because it actually was a rainforest that got cleared away, right?
Mm.
So, yeah, that's why, that was his theory, but I mean, maybe that's the lore or whatever, but it makes sense.
Going back to the Braves thing, I wonder if it's because for a while there, the TV station TBS, which was a network, it's Turner Broadcasting Service, so it was a network formed by Ted Turner, who was based in Atlanta, and it was one of the early cable stations that was available everywhere. So it was originally a local Atlanta station that kind of became nationwide because it was on cable in the early days.
Oh,
they used to show all the Braves games.
Wasn't he the owner of the Braves at some point?
He was, and maybe still is. Yeah. So I wonder if that's where it came from, because they could get that channel. So the only baseball they could get was Braves or something like that. Purely a guess.
Uh-huh. Very well could be. That's actually a pretty good point.
Yeah.
Weirdness.
But all okay, right. Baseball trivia question: what three cities have the Braves played in as their home base?
As the Braves.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Obviously, Atlanta is one of them.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. There's two left.
Mm-hmm.
No idea. Athens isn't that far away from Atlanta.
No, it's got to be something weird, like far away, like another market.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, like we've had the Hartford Whalers became something, New Jersey Devils, I think.
Yeah.
And then, I may be wrong about that. You know, and the Colorado Rockies used to be the Quebec Nordique, that kind of thing, right? And the Calgary Flames were Atlanta Flames at one point, I think, right?
So, that's a pretty dark name for a team.
What's that?
Atlanta Flames?
Why is that?
Because it seems like a reference to Sherman burning down Atlanta during the Civil War.
Oh.
It may in fact be. It may in fact be, right? It may in fact be. The Whalers, the Hartford Whalers weren't like guitar players. They were large mammal hunters, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, so the Braves started out as the Boston Braves.
Oh, really?
Yeah, until the 1950s.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so
you guys had the Red Sox too, right?
We still have the Red Sox. Yep.
Okay.
So back in the early days, yeah, there were two Boston teams. Were the Braves and the Red Sox. Mm. Braves were the National League team, Red Sox were the American League team.
Okay, right.
And then they moved to Milwaukee for a bunch of
Milwaukee
they
Braves.
Were the Milwaukee Braves. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And then eventually they moved to Atlanta.
Does Milwaukee have Milwaukee doesn't have a team now.
Yeah, the Milwaukee Brewers. Another trivia question.
Brewers.
So,
right.
So who were they originally before they became the Milwaukee Brewers? Jaime?
I don't know.
This one's for you.
Oof. I have no idea. Let's see.
The El Paso Brewers.
Yeah. No. But you're sort of on the right track.
Really? Texas. Did they come out of like Dallas or something?
No. Well, maybe not much of the right track. So it's a city where Jaime has lived.
Oh, Seattle?
They were the Seattle Pilots.
Yeah. Oh, that's where the Pilots went. I knew they were Seattle Pilots here. I didn't know where they went to.
Yep.
Ooh. Interesting. More than just code, folks.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Brooklyn Dodgers.
The Brooklyn Dodgers. Yeah, that's the LA Dodgers now, right?
Mm-hmm. They are.
Yeah. Huh, interesting. And you know where London Bridge is? You've heard of London Bridge just falling down, that story?
Isn't it in London?
Nope.
No?
Nope.
Where is it?
Oh, I forgot now.
Yeah.
Arizona.
Oh, is that the one that they took down and moved?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty sure it's Arizona. We could do some real-time follow-up on that. Yeah, it's London. The song London Bridge is Falling Down is about, I think it's about the Black Plague. You know, ring around the rosy pocket full of posies. The posies were to get rid of the smell of all the dead people. And hush, hush, we all fall down is like we're all getting sick and dying. So, now you know. Now you know where children's things come from.
Yeah.
Let's look London Bridge here.
Okay, Jaime, speaking of Texas baseball trivia, the Texas Rangers, who were they before they were the Texas Rangers?
I thought it might have had something related to Kansas City, but I might be thinking of the wrong relationship because there's something weird like that for the Dallas Texans or something became.
That was actually the Cowboys, I think.
Yeah, they moved out to become the Chiefs and then the Cowboys came. Yeah.
But the Texas Rangers were originally the Washington Senators.
Huh.
Hmm.
That's the name of the basketball team that weird. The.
And the Houston Astros were originally the Houston Colt 45s back in the day.
Okay, so real-time follow-up. London Bridge is in Lake Havasu City, Arizona.
Havasu, yeah.
Havasu?
Okay. Big spring break place for Arizonians.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Tim, did I kind of in line semi with your, going international and stuff, did I tell you about my idea that we have a rare opportunity here with Brexit to recombine things so the UK can rejoin with the United States of America, and as long as we're coming, I think Canada can jump on on the van too, get on the bus, join us all. I haven't come up with a good name. I think United Kingdom of America is the closest I could come up with.
We'd have a king, though. We'd have a king?
We could still maintain the monarchy, we might make it so that like the Kardashians might be involved in that somehow.
I was going to say we have King Donald or something.
Call it Trump Kingdom.
Yeah.
And, if we got part of the Commonwealth, it'd be kind of silly to not have New Zealand, South Africa, and Australia rejoin.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What would we do in Mexico, though?
They weren't part of the original empire, so.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
They were Spanish.
We could decide, yeah.
Give them back to Spain?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was chatting about this with some, because I just happened at a local conference. I was chatting with somebody from England and somebody from Canada, and said like, "Hey, here's my crazy galaxy brain idea. So you combine these countries, and then other countries can do the same, right? So as you brought up, like maybe Mexico rejoins Spain and other bits, and then you keep recombining those countries until you only have like five countries in the world, mega countries. And then here's the crazy part: then you combine those five into one country, and now your mind is blown. And then if this was a visual medium, you would have the mind explosion. Illusion gif sort of thing happening right now.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it could happen. So you said Trump pardoned a turkey the other day, yesterday.
It's a very weird, and I don't know how far back it goes, it's a very weird tradition for American presidents around Thanksgiving to pardon a turkey.
Mm-hmm. And then what happens to the turkey?
That's a good question. I mean,
they still probably eat them.
Yeah.
They just leave them out in the wild. Like, you're free.
Yeah. Yeah, they probably don't tell anybody that.
They give them a Mussolini engraved card that says, better to live 1 year as a lion than 100 years as a sheep. Just send them out into the wilds.
Who said that? Mussolini?
Apparently. Really? Could be wrong on that. That came up as a thing here in the U.S. It's a constant thing. As I mentioned before, it's like, you guys in Canada are going to be real toasty from our dumpster fire here warming up your buttocks.
Mm-hmm. Right. So we have to work a new term into our podcast. Have you guys seen the videos about the guy who cuts a boat in half and tapes it back together and this miracle tape?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they
use the same stuff. They punch a hole in a bucket.
Yeah.
With water, and they just cover it up with that tape.
Well, they cover it up with the spray or something like that, right? They just keep spraying it till it's like it got a whole new plastic bottom. Mm-hmm. But he always says, that's a lot of damage, right? So I have to work that into our podcast somewhere. Because I was watching one the other day where the nephews were showing me that he pokes a hole in the bottom of the bucket, and then he takes a chainsaw and cuts a couple of holes, and he starts spraying the spray inside the bucket, but he keeps spraying it until it eventually fills in the gap, right? So it must have some kind of webbing in it or something. Like that, but where he cuts the boat in half and then goes out on the lake and sails around with this little power boat with this magic tape that, you know, seals inside water and stuff like that. Craziness. That's the stuff that makes kids excited these days.
Apparently it works reasonably well. there's a YouTube channel called Crazy Russian Hacker who tests out crazy things like that. And he had some of that, but it was like really old. It was like 10 years old or something by that point. And even then he tested it out. He's like, oh, it's actually not that bad. Like, he had this huge, I can't remember what it was. It must have been like a 10-gallon orange bucket from Home Depot, and he cut a hole, and he was like, oh, okay, so depending on where the hole is, here's how much like pressure this thing can hold. And so if the hole's kind of closer to the top, it like has no problem. But if you put the hole closer to the bottom where all the weight from the water, then it started leaking out. And he's like, well, it could be because the stickiness here is maybe is as sticky as it normally would be with fresh ones. And he's like, oh, I wonder if you can use it to, you know, is it strong enough to lift up this like 40-pound weight or something? And he does. And I don't know that it's as great as they make it sound in the made-for-TV video, but it sounds like it's not a total scam. It sounds good. Mm. It does work in some limited capacity.
Right. Well, there you go. Anyway, I gotta get going. I gotta go to training in the morning for 8:30, something crazy like that.
Oh, yeah. Tomorrow's day off for us. That's nice.
Oh, yeah. You guys are putting your feet up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ooh, look, HyperCard. I can put a HyperCard on my...
We should have Thanksgiving every week because the traffic has been amazing this week.
Yeah?
It's like it used to be. You know, I leave my house, I get on the freeway, I drive at 70 miles an hour, I get to the office, and, you know, it's like it's a freeway.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. I thought you would end up with trouble going at least one direction because of people all scrambling to travel elsewhere. Mm. That's pretty good. Here in Seattle, we're having big trouble with people trying to, as I mentioned before, a lot of people weren't from here. So they're all, you know, driving to wherever it is they're driving and trying to get to the airport to get to family.
Well, my commute isn't along the routes out of the Bay Area, kind of in between. So if you're leaving San Jose, you're not going up the peninsula, which is where my commute is. And if you're leaving San Francisco, which is at the top of the peninsula, you're not going down the peninsula. You're probably going east in both cases to get out of the area.
Cool. Sounds like you do definitely benefit from just people being out of the area, period.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's, I haven't seen it like this since last, last holidays, you know, last Christmas time hasn't been this light. Great. But it'll be over next time I have to commute again on Monday. It'll probably be even worse. Oh, well. All right, Tim. We'll let you go for your training.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Learn how to set up your own personal email.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Yeah. Well, I know this is related to people management, but I've actually just found copies of apps I'm going to try and play with and figure out where to put them. All right, boys. All right. Talk to you later.
Have a good night.
Bye. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.